Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Bedlam Theatre Company's latest production is Cry Havoc. As the company's website states, Bedlam creates works of theatre that reinvigorate traditional forms in a flexible, raw space, collapsing aesthetic distance and bringing its viewers into direct contact with the dangers and delicacies of life. In Cry Havoc, Stefan Wolfert recounts his own experiences of military service, weaving his personal narrative with the lines from some of William Shakespeare's most famous speeches. Pulling from the Bard's war narratives to work through the trauma of the military experience, the one-actor production is directed by Bedlam co-founder Eric Tucker. Shakespeare & Company in Lenox, Massachusetts presented the show last summer, and it's currently running at the New Ohio Theater off-Broadway in New York City through April 23rd. Stefan Wolfert and Eric Tucker are both military veterans, and Bedlam's outreach program invites other veterans to meet every Monday to explore the writings and performance of Shakespeare, and to be mindful in a shared space with other veterans, to relate their experiences to the literature, the drama, and to each other. Stefan Wolfert joins us to tell us more about Bedlam's outreach program and Cry Havoc.
As you talk about this piece, you have to tell the stories over and over again, I recognize. But I need you to tell me today, too, how did you come to the theater and then, through all of that, come to this project and your work with Bedlam and with veterans?
It was a multi-year project just to get to the theater, but I condense it, of course, in the play for the convention of theater. But I was in the Army. I was actually training throughout Desert Shield and Desert Storm in Fort Benning, Georgia, and then ended up in Fort Irwin, California, where a dear friend of mine was killed. And I had already been having things happening in my head before that, just starting to question, I guess, I don't know, just something was happening with the military. I was so gung-ho, and things had happened, a number of things had happened, started shifting that for me. And I wound up in a theater. I realized now that I was, you know, right after my friend was killed, that I was going through something, but I was in that environment of you know, well, don't, just drive on, don't worry about it, it's not a big deal.
The masculinity trap and the military trap.
Yes, I grew up with it. You know, the Midwest, no one's immune to it, that it's the United States, but certainly in, you know, where I'm from, the blue-collar town I'm from, or part of town that I'm from, it's very much that macho image, and then the military is, you know, drive on, keep it quiet. It doesn't matter about gender, it's the idea is drive on. So I was trying to, but then something started cracking, and I wound up in a theater, and I didn't come from that. And in fact, growing up, people were made fun of for even going to it. I mean, that's my right. You know, a lot of this stuff is my recollection, too. When I look back, someone says, oh, what about this? I'm like, oh, right. Because my recollection is that you just didn't do that. It was a hobby, and it was for certain types that, you know, I didn't want to be, and they weren't macho, you know, that whole thing. So I ended up seeing Shakespeare's Richard III, and it begins, of course, with a veteran on stage saying, the war's over, now what? And I didn't know the story, so this particular veteran is deformed physically, but when he said, I'm deformed, and I can't fit back into society, I viewed that as myself. I was imagining the thoughts I'm having and my rage reactions that I'd have and how quick I was to, you know, just complete like berserker mode. And all this stuff that was going on, my sleep, not sleeping well, and right, all these things. And he's describing it on stage. So, of course, I had what today we, you know, the Western theater they describe as a catharsis. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I just know I was snotting and bawling and didn't know you could have emotions in public and was choking it all down. And it ended up staying with me and affecting me so greatly that I ended up eventually leaving the Army to go to graduate school for acting to focus specifically on Shakespeare. And that work, the classical actor training along with Shakespeare, and now working with veterans for the last two decades across the nation, as well as human scientists, I now use this work to help with the transition out of the military, and frankly, just to treat trauma from whatever it is. But from my experience, I lifted stuff, and then with other people, I'm like, oh, yeah, let's add that. And human, you know, psychology teaches me something. I'm like, oh, yeah, let's insert that. Now that's what I do.
How did you begin working with Bedlam?
Well, Eric and I went to graduate school together. So Eric, the co-founder, along with Andrus and the artistic director, he was actually at Trinity Rep. And when I was looking at graduate schools, no, I wasn't the prime candidate. I didn't have hardly any training at all. And I was, you know, let's just leave it there. You know what I mean? And I'm sure if you ask Stephen Berenson and Brian McElhaney at Trinity Rep how my audition was, they'd probably go, oh, Dear Lord. It was a charity case. Eric was there already. He was in school, and he was finishing grad school when I was looking at him. And I was blown away by this conservatory, and in particular by some of the work that I'd seen him do. I really latched on. In fact, I went up and introduced myself. I'm like, hi, I'm Stefan Wolford. I'm going to go here, and I'm going to work with you. And I was just that kind of mindset at that time in my life. And I did, thanks to Brian and Stephen, go to Trinity Rap. And Eric and I started working on essentially what Cry Havoc, the beginnings of Cry Havoc, even then. It was the beginning of it was my graduate thesis presentation. It was a 45-minute version of Richard III that he had cut down. And in my hubris, I'd inserted some of my own stories in place of Shakespeare's monologues because I thought I was a poet, apparently. But now Cry Havoc is the inverted version of that. It's my narrative with Shakespeare interwoven with it. And Eric, of course, directed it. And I was in California doing my work with vets. And Eric was out there as well. We were both out there for about a decade. He had started Bedlam, told me about what he was doing. Of course, I wanted to work with him. I was married to my wife, Dawn Stern, out in L.A., and we had just lost our physical indoor space and our outdoor space in the same year. So I was...
A theater space.
Yes, yeah. We did Shakespeare with Veterans outdoors near the VA for years, and then had an indoor space in the storage facility, or I'm sorry, the storage room of a furniture store, high-end furniture store, Mortis and Tenon in Los Angeles. This guy was amazing. He gave us this space. I mean, on La Brea, I mean, put it this way, a square footage anywhere, we know about that in New York, right? But on La Brea Avenue, retail space, really expensive. And he gave up a whole like 40 by 40 space for us to do our work with vets day and night. He gave me keys. He was amazing. Anyways, we had lost that due to some, you know, restrictions and or changes in zoning and all that. And then Eric told me about all the amazing work they're doing out here. We were already working on Cry Havoc. And he had asked, hey, would you consider coming out here and doing, or I asked him, I don't know. In my mind, it's that, hey, he had said, I want our outreach to be veterans only. That's what I want to focus, because he's a veteran too. Right. He said, I'd like you to do what you do with Bedlam and be a part of Bedlam. I'm like, you dang right I will. And my wife and I were out here within the year doing Cry Havoc and the veterans outreach.
Our guest is Stefan Wolford. We're discussing his work with Bedlam Theater Company and the current production, Cry Havoc.
How does the veterans outreach work? And before we talk about how it works, like why it's good and how it helps people, how does it work? Nuts and bolts. How do the veterans find you? How do you afford to have time to work with them?
The way they find us is it's word of mouth. There's about, well, according to Joe Bello, and I trust him because his stats are pretty astounding. He's a guy that likes stats as much as I do. But there's about 250,000 vets estimated in New York City, and that's actually not a lot given the population, and especially considering the state has over 1 million veterans. It's one of only 3 states that has that. We decided that the way to get the word of mouth going is to have this space. This is what I did in L.A. as well, is have that space at the same time every week, no matter what, whether it's a holiday, whether no one shows, or whether 100 show. And Eric was committed to that. So he went to the board of Bedlam and said, this is what he needs and this is what he wants to make this happen. And they did it. And I, you know, for the first year, it was like one vet would show, 3 vets. And I didn't care. For that 3 hours, I worked with them. And then the word started spreading, and I was hitting a lot of events, of course, and getting to know more and more vets, and going to a lot of other people's functions, too, because, again, because there's so few of us, we end up having to support each other. Otherwise, we're pirating each other, you know. So started going out, and people started coming, and now it's quite a lot. We have about 25 vets on a Monday, and we're now doing our women veterans-only class on Tuesdays. Now, that's about to end, but short term, we're going to reactivate it. But it was a trial, and it just absolutely took off. We had 10 to 15 women veterans each Tuesday as well, and that's people rotating. It's not even the same 25 or same. You know what I mean? It's people get things, and the whole idea is that they can come and go as they please. It's not a here's our start date, here's the end date, and it starts at 6 and we're locking the doors. It's not like that. It's come and go as you need. It's there for you. We're here for you if you need us. And if you don't, cool. And if, you know, we need more people, I put out the word and say, hey, we need some extra support on this night because of, you know, so-and-so's presenting something and we want you to support. So that's how it's grown. That's the nuts and bolts of it. That's how they reach us. Should I give an email too, or outreach@bedlam.org is my email, and I give that out freely. I hand out. In fact, Bedlam's given me business cards that have my info, and on the back it says free class for vets, and I burn through, you know, a few hundred every few months out on the subway, and I see people with a hat or a shirt, and like, hey, you a vet? Or I can always tell. There was a guy in the subway, and I was staring at his pack. It was just a civilian pack, but he had all the straps taped up just a certain way, right? And I'm like, he's got to be. So he's caught me staring, and I'm like, what branch? He's like, what? How'd you know? I'm like, dude, your rucksack. He goes, oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, it was Army. We get talking, gave him a card. He goes, oh, yeah, okay. So that's how it grows. And then he came, and he started telling his buddies who were still in the National Guard and Reserves, and they started coming. So, yeah, that's how we get it going.
The process, the classes, the meetings, it is theater introduction, acting, training, a kind of therapy. Mm-hmm. How does that work? How does it go? What happens? And are the vets, do any of them do it to potentially pursue an acting career, or is it not really for that, or a mashup?
Yeah, it's mashup is the best word for it. It's everything you just said, because a portion of them, I would say less than a third, actually want to be actors. Some might be writers or something, but I would say even less than a third, probably like a quarter, and then another a portion are writers or producers or that kind of thing. But are artists in some realm, might be filmmakers, what have you. But they really come for the camaraderie, and the camaraderie under a creative atmosphere. That's where the reason, and that's what I'm hearing back. That's what I created. And that is what I'm hearing back. And it's also fluid. I mean, as they tell me, hey, I'd like to do this, we're like, all right, great. It's always a grand experiment. And that's why it's growing. It's not about me. It's about them. What do you need? That's where the women veterans class came from. We have a great number of women veterans. And they were pointing it out to me that even in the class, how it reflected society. They were a minority. They weren't heard as much. So we talked about creating a separate space for them. But the mechanics of it are, it really is performing arts classes, period. Right now, because of our limited resources, it's just me teaching. So I teach what I teach, and it's regardless of experience. We have there's a number who are professional actors. Mary Jo McConnell's out in La Jolla Playhouse right now doing a show. Chris Walker is doing more TV and film than I've ever done, and he's done it just these last 2 months. So there are a number that are professional actors, and they come just, again, to be with their brothers and sisters, to do creative stuff. Everyone gets to act. The rule is that it's not a scene study, so it really isn't the stereotypical scene study, in that the idea is if there's 25, then we divide up that time by 25, and everyone needs to hop up and perform at some point. We're not critiquing, and they're not critiquing each other, none of that. I do prompted writings. We also don't critique that. It's not like the, New York City, was it Warrior Writers and New York City Writers Workshop? There's a bunch of great classes that already do that. And I'll let people who are skilled in their fields do that. Mine is doing Shakespeare. And I do Shakespeare from a veteran's perspective. And I do it whether you're professional or beginner. But we all attack it the same way. So whether you're beginning, I might short-circuit people because like, wait, I learned it this way. I'm like, yeah, let's just try it this way for now. And I do it with, as you said, that therapeutic edge. Bedlam isn't offering a therapy class, but I'm always embracing the therapy component of it. I was lucky enough and have been lucky enough to work with the Native American community since 2001. And the indigenous performance arts culture just embraces theater as medicine. And that term is actually from Yvette Nolan. She talks about it in her book, Medicine Shows, that theater is medicine. And I watched how, you know, they just embraced it. All I heard since grad school was, well, theater is therapeutic, but it's not therapy. But for me, it was. You know, it was saving my life, literally, along with that camaraderie, a community of people who would not let me fall off that cliff no matter what. Even though I tried, and they kept catching me. So that's what this is designed to create. Now, like I said, I do dig in there a bit and say, you know, well, what is this? What do you relate? Because I'm picking very specific monologues and scenes that are based in, that veterans see, in my opinion, in a unique way that civilians don't. And on a certain level, a deeper level, I would argue, or I don't want to say deeper, that's presumptuous, but just a different level of depth, and a very specific military culture-oriented one. So that's what I do. But the idea with Bedlam is to offer a full array of classes, right? So we'd love to have a class where Eric's teaching directing, or any of the other gifted directors in Bedlam, or New York City, or writing workshops. We've had Dave Demke and Rebecca Poole come in and do voice classes in Alexander Technique and Linklater. We'd love to get a full set of, you know what I mean, a weekly class of that for veterans to just be able to attend. That it's every Wednesday night is, you know, Linklater, and every Thursday, you know what I mean? To have a full array of classes is the goal. But right now, you're stuck with me. I do bring in master teachers. You know, they're like I mentioned, Rebecca and Dave and Madeline, who does yoga. And some of the vets also teach some of the stuff. Like I said, MJ teaches meditation. She'll come in and gift the room with a 20-minute meditation to begin the process, just to try different stuff. So yeah, that's what we're offering.
Cry Havoc has been in development on and off various stages, different iterations for a number of years. What have you had to learn? What have you had to change? What have you had to do? What guidance have you been given to make it the thing that Bedlam is putting up now?
Wow, that's another one that has so many facets to it. What I've learned, what this step is with Eric directing it on specifically for Bedlam to produce off-Broadway, what we're experimenting with is to see, where does it stand as a piece of theater in New York? Or at least I am. Obviously they wouldn't put it up if they had doubts. But that's the thing with Eric, that he takes such huge risks with everything, whether it's a small thing in a play or choices for a play, he's willing to go there. I mean, he's the one that, you know, when I started doing this, I knew I wanted it to be highly transportable, you know, to be able to do. I said, I want to be able to do it in a living room or in a big theater. But I came in, I'm like, so we'll carry a projector and we'll project things on the back wall. And he was daring enough to say, let's just have you and the audience. That's it. And that's the Bedlam aesthetic, right? That just the actor-audience relationship. He said, can you fill the space? Can you make the set for us? And that's what he's worked on. And it has worked as it goes out, because it's both, if I can humbly say, you know, a powerful piece of theater, but it's also, there's a really strong message to it. And it's usually a conversation starter. That sounds like a cocktail, a pre-cocktail performance. It's not at all. It elicits discourse, challenging discourse, ideally between veterans and civilians. I'm sharing veteran stories, my own and others, so that family members, which is what happens, I go into a community and then we would do a talk back right after and say, where are the veterans? Where are the family members? Have you ever heard that story before? No. Our own board member, one of them was a Vietnam veteran and his son had gone to Iraq. And they had never talked about their experiences until they came to Cry Havoc. Then they stayed up all night and they were texting me saying, we're still talking, talked about their experience, finally sharing, and that's the point of it. So it was a message piece and a powerful one, a transformative one by design. Now the challenge is, where do I stand in New York City theater? Do you know what I mean? As a piece of theater rather than just the message. I don't know that you can separate the two, but in this case, it's more of, all right, we're putting it up. Not going to a community full of veterans for a few weeks, but rather right here in New York City for a month, which has been a dream of mine. I'm not sleeping much these days. I'm a little wired. So yeah, I'm crazed. I love it.
Is there any story too personal? Obviously, I'm not asking you to tell. If there is, I'm not asking you to tell it to me. But is there, as you put your life and your experiences in the show, was there anything that you tapped on and then had to tap out on and couldn't include it, couldn't imagine telling it to strangers every night?
Yes, but then Eric made me put him in. When I first did this, I was working on it in LA, and Eric was traveling so much, so I'd get to work with him a little bit, and he'd leave town, and you know, and I'd have the budget. We didn't know what we were doing necessarily. And when I say we, I mean my wife and I working on it, and then Bruce Servi, a dear friend who was you know, directing, helping, being the brilliant outside eye until I could get Eric into town to really do his thing. And yeah, there were stories that when I first went in front of the audience, keep in mind, I didn't have a script. I had about 25 24, 25 monologues memorized, and I knew stories that in my that I've always associated with them. And I didn't go unrehearsed, but it was really impromptu, and I would shift and move, and there wasn't a plan. When I stepped on stage, I knew that I was going to say first was those lines of Richard that landed me, now is the winter of our discontent. That's it. I might not finish the speech. I might, and it was always going off of the audience. And I was being quite safe. I would self-deprecate to convince everyone that, oh, no, I'm okay. Don't worry. But then when Eric got in, he really dug in and said, you know, are you okay? I said, no, I'm a mess. You know, and he said, well, that's what we want to see. Show us the mess. We'll be okay. Stop worrying about us. Stop convincing us that you're okay. So from that, then certain stories would literally leak out of my mouth sometimes. There's a horrifying one that's in the play that came out the day of the Newtown Massacre. And I'd shared it with Eric and some of the other folks, Bruce and Dawn, who were in the room. And Eric said, that has to be in there. And I was mortified. Absolutely not. It cannot. He said, it must. It absolutely must. Let's at least try it tonight. And I was, without exaggeration, in the fetal position, crying center stage, just going, this play's going to kill me. It was that. There was that much being ripped out of me. But he did it, and they had me, and the audience took care of me. And afterwards, I realized, oh, wow. And then the discussion was that. It was other vets saying, that's my experience, or it's not mine, but my dad or my mom. Or do you know what I mean? It really did take it to a level that I hadn't imagined, and I was so focused on me, I didn't think, oh, right, who else needs to hear this? And that's what keeps me doing it now, because even though these are very personal, what had happened with it is that it has been therapy for me. So I don't see things the way I did then. Do you know what I mean? Some I do, but a lot of things, the way I view my childhood is no longer the way I express it in Cry Havoc. I go there when I'm doing it, but I now see things in a different way, because this is five or six years later, doing how many hundreds of performances and discussions and working with the veterans, and now I have a different mindset. So now there's new stories coming out, but that play's got to be set. They're sort of the next step or the next play, if there is one. I mean, I have the workings of it, but there's new stuff coming out that's so personal that I'm, you know, forcing out of my body to share and have the same process happen.
Stefan Wolfert performs Cry Havoc at the New Ohio Theater off-Broadway in New York City through April 23rd. For ticket and showtime information, and to learn more about Bedlam Theater Company and their veteran outreach program, visit bedlam.org. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.